It's the Mike O'Mara Show.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show. We're not going to play a funny little sound now because I don't want to keep this gentleman waiting anymore. We're going to get right to it and get to Mr. David Carradine. I'm an enormous fan of David Carradine. David, thank you. We're sorry we kept you waiting there a little bit. Happy to have you on the show. How are you, sir?
Oh, okay.
Good. Where do I start with David? I guess I'll start with what's happening right now. Kung Fu Killer on Spike. Saw a little trailer for this. I guess pretty good timing with the Olympics and stuff.
Sure.
I think everybody's kind of got that whole China thing on the brain.
I think that was probably an accident that it comes out along with the Olympics and everything. We did shoot it in China, nowhere near Beijing.
Were you on the countryside? Was it the countryside of China where you were?
Yeah, you could call it that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just a standoff.
No, I'm just curious. Thought you were going to tell us,
give us a little travel log of China.
A couple of weeks into the movie, one of the crew members stopped me in the hotel and said, "Listen, we're going out tonight. You want to go out with us?" And I said, "There's an out in this town?"
Oh, wow. A little desolate. That's a long way to go. I mean, usually you think you can accomplish the subject matter, doing it on a back lot or on location somewhere in Canada or the United States.
Toronto,
To go all the way, what was the authenticity? Was that the purpose of actually shooting in China?
That's exactly what it was. And the fact that Robert Holmey, you know, of Hallmark, he likes China.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but... you know, the idea was, it's a Chinese story. You could shoot it anywhere, but why not shoot it where it's supposed to happen?
And it's, when you're talking about Kung Fu, we're talking about what really put you on the map and made you a household name. Everybody knew Kung Fu back in the day when I was watching it. And the amazing thing about your career that I find interesting is that your career kind of had a resurgence with the Kill Bill movies. So there we are with martial arts again. How important were the Kill Bill movies to your career? I mean, you've been doing this and you've been
definitely. Kill Bill made a difference for sure. I mean, if you more or less star in a Tarantino movie and you manage to dominate the movie, which I think I did the second part.
Mm-hmm.
I even managed to kind of dominate the first part, even though my face wasn't there.
You did. That's what makes, I think, the movie magical.
Yeah, I had a hand, and, every 15 minutes, my voice would come in like a commercial, and just remind you that I'm about to show someday. I think it made a definite difference. Not in the amount of work I was doing, because I was always working. I always have been. But in the level of it, I think I moved from exploitation films to independent films.
Right.
And then I guess somebody like Robert Holmey took notice and wanted me to do this series of films that we're doing. I've been doing this kind of thing for now, close to 40 years.
That's amazing.
Not that often, really. You know, I did the series and... you know, I've made 132, I think it is, feature movies.
Wow.
And about 25 movies of the week or miniseries.
Right, and you've done so many guest starring roles also.
Well, yeah, but you got to understand that of those 132 movies, probably only about 6 or 7 of them ever had anything to do with martial arts.
Right.
And of the movies of the week, these two that I've done for Robert Holmey are the only two that I've ever done that had anything whatsoever to do with martial arts. You know, I played the painter Gauguin. I played this southern plantation owner in North and South. You know, the weird gardener in The Bad Seed.
Well, the thing is...
nothing to do with martial arts. I mean, I haven't really done that much martial arts.
Yet
I'm totally identified with it.
I was looking at your filmography today, David,
mm-hmm.
and two things strike me with your filmography. You go back. I don't perceive you, as a guy that has been around as long as you have. In the roles you play, I always think of you as not necessarily playing the fatherly older character. You've been doing this, but you always come across, I don't know whether people have told you this,
younger.
You kind of come across as younger than you are.
Listen,
and
I myself, when I go on a set, I always think I'm the kid. And I tell you, these days sometimes I'm the oldest person you know, within 10 miles of the set.
You don't sound old. I mean, you're saying, I should tell our listening.
But I always, maybe that's why, because I always feel like I'm the kid. You know, I feel like,
that's good.
Duh, you know, I don't know what's going on here. What am I supposed to do now?
You're a mellow dude, right?
Well, I didn't say that.
Didn't have to. I hope I don't embarrass you, but I really find it, even speaking to you on the telephone, you're 72 years old, and you don't, I sound like
I'm actually 71. Come
71.
On, give me a break.
Beth Ann, he's 71. Beth Ann, that's my producer. The
December, uh-huh. December 8th.
Yeah, December 8th. Okay, so you always hear about, you know, being pigeonholed, and you talk about how limited the martial arts work you did was in your career. When I was looking at your filmography, I was blown away on the sheer volume and how long you have been what everybody wants to be that's a member of the union. You want to be a working actor. Mm-hmm. You have done so much work.
Steady.
And, you know, you do have that happen, especially when it's a TV role. You get, you know, pigeonholed after the Kung Fu. Was that difficult for you? Obviously, maybe it wasn't because you say you've done so many different things, but was that hard breaking free of the success of that television program?
Well, no, actually. I mean, you know, look, the first thing I did after that was Death Race 2000. The second thing after that, I did Bound for Glory, which was about an Oklahoma folk singer, right, named Woody Guthrie.
Yeah, and it's a great role, too.
And then I went to Germany and did a movie with Ingmar Bergman. I mean, I can't imagine how untyped that sounds to me.
Was it hard for you to do that, though? Did you have to escape that? Did you have to get out of Hollywood, and did you have to try different things?
No, they just offered me, you know.
And you took it, right?
Well, actually, I campaigned for Bound for Glory.
Mm-hmm.
But the Serpent's Egg, the Ingmar Bergman picture, he asked for me.
I'm going to give you a couple of films here that in your filmography that I remember that actually were special films. And I just want you to tell me, first of all, if you remember them, and secondly, if you enjoyed doing them.
I remember everything.
Gray Lady Down is a movie that I thought you were fantastic
in. Yeah, a disaster
in.
Movie with Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston.
And Christopher Reeve.
I don't picture you with Charlton Heston like
and,
going out.
Well,
after
I wasn't ever with him.
You never did a scene with him?
No. I mean, if you've ever seen the movie, I rescue him. I'm in my own submarine. He's in the nuclear submarine.
Right.
We never meet each other.
But you're talking to him all the time,
rescuing.
David. You're talking to him all the time. See, I thought you guys actually knew each other. Did you ever hang out with Charlton?
You know, he thinks we did. He thought,
of course.
Right. And I never bothered to correct him, but I actually never met him during the picture.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I used to meet him at the hardware store on Laurel Canyon. But he'd come in looking for tools, you know, wearing his windbreaker and stuff, just being a regular guy.
Right.
But on the picture, actually, we never made any kind of contact at all.
The other movie
but that's when I got to know Stacy Keach and Christopher Reeve.
Ah.
That was cool.
The other movie I want to mention, I think one of those
Ned
guys
Beattie.
Is in it. The Long Riders. Can you talk about that
the
movie?
The Long Riders.
I love that movie.
What can I say about that? You know, some people tell me it's one of the 10 best Westerns ever made.
I would agree with that.
Okay, but there's a lot of great Westerns.
Yeah, but it's just, there was this, now give me, I'm going back a ways. I just remember you, and I remember the title of that movie, but I wasn't able to grab it and watch it again. Refresh my memory. Were you in that with a couple of your brothers?
It was the Carradines, the Quaids.
Yes.
The Keaches.
And that worked. I mean, because you had not only the look of all you guys, but you had the relationships that were going there.
Well, you know, we were all buddies anyway. We all knew each other for years, you know. I mean, actors tend to do that anyway. But, you know, these family groups do tend to hang together, even if they're not members of the same family.
Right.
We just do that. And, you know, it's kind of a brother thing.
So you you know, you enjoy working with the you know with the Keaches and
it was nothing but fun, man.
Right?
I mean, you know, we all knew each other for years and loved each other. And what we're doing is we're riding horses, shooting off guns, drinking moonshine, and then
it's the normal week.
I don't know if you remember that there's a series before our last robbery, you know, that gets us in all the trouble.
Right.
We all go to a whorehouse.
Yeah, I remember
that. And each of us had a special scene with a hooker. So they brought up, we were shooting in Georgia. And to the little town we were shooting in, they imported an entire topless bar from Atlanta. And these girls lived there with us for 2 weeks while they shot their scenes. And they were very, very friendly.
Wow. How nice.
That, see, that's what I love. Perk.
That didn't suck at all, did it? That's good stuff.
Pretty cool.
Can I ask how you got hooked up with Quentin Tarantino, since that did become sort of a turning point for you recently?
Well, I stalked him.
Good for you. That's a theme on today's show.
That's quite a theme on today's show.
Starting out in 1996, I was at the Toronto Film Festival, and he was there. And I thought, man, I got to make a movie with this guy. So I found out what hotel he was staying at just by calling hotels and got him on the phone and said, you know, we ought to talk. And he came down, and I said, we should make a movie together. And he said, yeah, okay. And then eventually he started writing one, and I just kept stalking here.
Family show, watch out.
And it sure paid off.
Hey, I have to ask you, because really, when I talk about, yes, you've been in the business a long time, but I was telling the guys in the office before the show, when I'm looking at everything you've done, and you talk about, I stalked him, I wanted that work, I went for it. You know, we think of David Carradine. When I see you interviewed, or when I hear you on a radio like this, you think, hey, mellow guy, laid-back guy. But what I look at when I look at that filmography, I look at a guy that has been busting his ass since the 60s. Oh, man, yeah. Do you ever have downtime? Because you have an amazing volume of work. You're working all the time. It seems to me, at least on paper, you have a pretty damn good work ethic.
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can only do what you're offered.
Right.
I went through, there's a couple of periods, even after I'd starred on Broadway, had my own TV series, you know, which I had before Kung Fu, the Shane series, which only ran for 17 segments.
Right.
And after that, you know, I barely had a job for like about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
There have been definite total down periods because you can only do what you're offered. And, you know, I think after a while I realized that you want to do something, you've got to campaign for it.
Like, and when you say, I don't mean to interrupt you, but when you say you can only do what you're offered, does that mean like when you're having these down periods, I mean, I think – Would you go out and do a, you know, a door knocking thing where you go out and do an audition, or you'd say, hey, I'm an audition, or I'm going to read for this?
I've always been willing to do auditions or screen tests or anything.
Okay.
I don't think it's a great idea because I rarely have gotten a part that way.
Usually it's, as you said, it's somebody offering you the part.
Well, the thing is that when you do an audition, you're trying to please the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really what the camera looks for.
Okay,
it doesn't actually like people who are trying to please. You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm fascinated by this because I've never heard this before. So you're saying...
And when you're auditioning, it's hard to do anything
else. David, watch out for the F-word. We can't say it on the radio.
I'd say no thank you.
Oh, you have to be careful. You know the FCC.
We need a moment.
Oh, do we have to catch up with Mr. Carradine?
If David can still hear us, we'll be right back with him.
Yeah, hold on a second. I'll speak to him.
Okay, very good. Speak to Mr. Carradine. Man, that's when I just started getting into it.
Once he opens up, he speaks freely.
Well, as somebody who's talking about acting, what he's saying is if you're trying to please, that's not what the camera looks for. Now, listen, this guy's made a lot of bad stuff. He's made a lot of good stuff.
Sure.
But the fact is, when you're talking about this particular angle of things, I'm very, you know, you always talk about the brooding, mellow actor.
Right.
Which David Carradine would be that type of guy.
You
but he's
think.
Saying. You audition, you're trying to please. If you're offered it, you just do what you're going to do.
See, that's that kung fu concentration. That
it's almost like not giving an S is a...
We're back. He was surprised we couldn't just bleep them.
Ah, that's a shame. That's a drag. David, thanks for that.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry about that. That's
no, right. But I
wasn't aware we were live.
Buzz and I were sitting here talking while we didn't have you on the air, and the thing about it is... You're saying if you're auditioning, you're trying to please, and that's not what the camera looks for. I've never heard that before. No. What you're saying is if you're trying, it's almost like if you're trying too hard, you're not going to give a true performance. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think it's closer to what I said.
Okay.
The camera does not like it when you're trying to please it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're Meg Ryan, maybe.
right.
I
think I get that.
That you know, I mean, you know, I always took my cue from, you know, I was trained in ballet, and one of the things I noticed, the difference between a ballet dancer and a tap dancer, is a tap dancer will be smiling at the audience all the time, trying to please them, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, as you notice, we don't have much in the way of tap dancers anymore, but we still do have ballet.
Yeah.
But a ballet dancer will absolutely ignore you. A ballet dancer is working entirely within the space of the choreography and the part she's playing, and she's working for her muse or the god that she works for or something, or just for herself or himself. But they're not working for the audience. They are ignoring the audience. And I think that's one of the secrets, is just forget the camera is there.
Okay.
Even though we know how to dance with it.
Right.
Let's just forget it's there and just say, hey, you know, you don't like it? Well, you know, the heck with you. I'm trying to not say any more F words or anything.
That's okay. I
want to understand what I'm saying.
I do understand, and it's fascinating because you know, and you come by it with a lot of credibility based on all the work that you've done. Coming from an acting family, you mentioned you were trained in ballet. Were you encouraged to join the family business? You know, with your father being a famous actor and having a lot of other brothers, how did that go down?
He, my father did not encourage any of us because he thought. At first, he thought he should discourage us because he figured if you could be discouraged, you should be because it's a very tough life.
Right.
Then he thought that's not fair, so he was just going to be neutral. But the moment that I first appeared on stage in anything, there he was, opening night, and he'd gone 500 miles to get there. And from that moment on, he gave me all the instruction he possibly could. He couldn't give me any help. He couldn't get me a job or anything. You know,
right.
He had to get his own jobs. And,
sure.
You know, that was hard enough for him.
Right.
And then the brothers, they didn't come along until later.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, he didn't really have much to do with them. I mean, you know, sure, he brought them up. But when they came down to Hollywood, they came to me because I was already, you know, striving down there.
So you helped your brothers a lot in the business? I mean, you did as much
you know,
as you
I
could.
Got them their first agents and their first jobs, and, you know, I directed them in movies and,
cool.
you know, everything.
Cool.
And then, what was the other question?
That's okay. I mean, I was just asking about the support. Yeah. You answered that question. Go ahead, Rob.
David, your father was an amazing actor, and I love a lot of his work, and I thought he was amazing in Stagecoach. What was it? Was it seeing him on the screen that drew you to acting first? What first made you want to start? And what gave you that first bite of the bug?
Well, it was kind of an accident. I mean, you know, I had always been in the little school plays and stuff like that. But I was actually a music major at San Francisco State College. I was studying theory and composition. I was going to write operas, was my idea.
Wow.
But the drama department and the music department were in the same building, and you could just walk down the hall and end up, you know, looking in on an acting class. And I also discovered that it was a lot more fun when you were at the cafeteria to sit at the drama table or the English table than the music table, because the music table, all they ever talked about was equipment. That's all they talked about. Whereas at the English table, they talk about literature. At the drama table, they're talking about emotions and people and, you know, love and hate and stuff like that. It was a lot more interesting to me. And then finally somebody said, hey, you want to be in a play?
Right.
You know, and I said, I don't know, what would I have to do? And he said, well, read this one-act play that I wrote that I'm going to do in class. And I read it, and I said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And then that pretty much just changed everything. From that moment on, all of a sudden there were other people that wanted me to audition or that handed me a play or something, and then I started doing a local what they call little theater, which is stuff you don't get paid for,
right,
and then you know, and I was working at Lucky Lager Brewery as a tank hog, on a graveyard shift. Uh-huh. Yeah, you clean the tanks.
Oh God, all right.
And
that's no fun.
Oh, it's a great job.
Well, would you get free beer? You get free beer there?
Oh, you got lots of beer.
Ah,
okay,
cool. All right, that's
and.
Cool.
And then a Shakespeare and Repertory came to town, missing a juvenile, because their juvenile had gotten a better job and went someplace else. So they held auditions, and I went and got the job, and suddenly I was a professional.
Very
and,
cool.
Well, I'm glad
you from there on, it just went that way. And
I'm glad you didn't write
and
operas.
And I never got around to writing that damn opera.
I'm glad. I think we're all glad you didn't write operas.
Someday.
I think that's cool.
Oh, it might have been pretty cool, man. I mean, come on.
You still
David,
can?
We've only got a few more minutes, and I want to get these things in before we let you go.
All right.
Your chemistry, you know, because I am a huge Kill Bill fan, and your chemistry in Kill Bill, I think it's Volume 2, with Uma Thurman at the end, that last scene where she comes to your home, and it's the final scene.
I saw the movie. You don't have to tell me.
I love it, man. I'm sorry. I dig it. I think it was incredible, and you did have chemistry with her. And
No, I didn't.
You didn't have any chemistry with her at all.
Well, look, I like Uma. I think she's a great actress.
Okay.
She's utterly beautiful.
Uh-huh.
But the truth is that our entire relationship was on film. In between takes, I would stand around and rap with the crew and do jokes and maybe dance or sing a little or throw a knife or something like that.
I love you, dude.
She would go off to this little place they set up for her and she'd knit. our relationship in other words, what I'm saying
you
is
were
that,
Bill, and she's supposed to be in love with you, and she's knitting while the camera's not running.
Well,
I can't believe it.
This is what I'm telling you, is that everybody thinks there was this huge chemistry between us.
I did, for Christ's sake. That's why I asked you the
I did it again.
Oh, that's okay.
She didn't care, huh?
Oh, I might make this the unedited interview available on our website. I wish we could use the words. Yeah. So she, you didn't, I mean, it was the acting between you, and you're saying there wasn't the chemistry.
No, she was not the least bit interested in me or anything I had anything to do with.
Well, good
and,
job.
You know, I would be interested in her for sure.
Sure.
Of course you would.
Why not?
You know, she's a Zen Buddhist, and her father, you know, is the foremost Caucasian authority on the Buddhist faith that there is on the planet.
I didn't know that. I had
no idea. I would love to get into.
Right.
But she wasn't the least bit interested in me. She's just doing her part.
Just not available.
And so, you know, I'm hanging out with the crew. I remember the prop man once said to me, "Isn't she beautiful?" I said, "Yeah, she's quite beautiful." He said, "You know, I can't look at her because I'm afraid she'll think I'm stalking her." And I said, "Well, you know, my job is to just stare at her." Right?
That's right. Good job.
You are a cool dude. You know, and I apologize for saying you were 72. You're 71. Do you see yourself?
Yeah, that's right.
Do you see yourself slowing down at any point? Are you gonna keep working?
I haven't seen it. No.
Good. Keep rocking and rolling. You gonna keep going?
I don't see why not.
There you go. And here's a jive question that I have to ask you. What's your favorite? Whether it's wherever in all of your travels, do you have a favorite Chinese restaurant? I have to pause.
I was about to say Ah Fong's, but it's closed.
Oh, that's a shame.
Oh, that's too bad.
There's a couple of others that I really loved that have been closed.
He's really giving it some thought, and I appreciate that about
trying.
David.
It's
Sunday, man. You're doing a good job.
You know, most of the Chinese food that I eat is, you know, we just call up and order, and, you know, some guy comes over and brings in a bunch of boxes.
Don't sweat it. It's fine.
It's Chinese takeout. I don't even know what the name of the place is.
Don't worry about
that's
it.
No
If you come to D.C.
Now, let me tell you.
Yes, go ahead.
In North America, have you ever seen any difference between any Chinese restaurant and any other Chinese restaurant?
No, not
Isn't
really.
Isn't it exactly the same no matter where you go?
David, I'm just going to tell you one thing. We
have one from column A and two from column B.
We have one
and
place.
No substitutions.
We have one place here in D.C. that if you ever come to D.C., Rob and I are going to take you to.
Yeah, I'd love to.
And I think you might think it's different.
The next time I'm running for president, I'll definitely look you up.
God bless you.
Vote for you.
I don't want to let you go without saying you star with Daryl Hannah this weekend, Spike TV's Kung Fu Killer. It is a two-part miniseries. It airs Sunday and Monday night at 10 on Spike in high def. Check your local listings or wherever you are. David, I could talk to you seriously, dude, for about 4.5 hours. I love the rhythm, and I wish you could use all the words you used, and we didn't have to hit the delay. L.A.
Oh, well, yeah.
You're a great guy. It's a,
you know, that's how everybody talks. But
I know.
You know, it sucks.
We live in a Puritan society.
It's horrible. It's bad. You're a good man. Please come back on the show sometime. We really enjoy talking to you. I'd love
to take
more time, okay?
You got it.
Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
That's David Carradine, everybody.
That was a ride, wasn't it?
That's a ride. That's one. That is why you come to work, because you don't know what the hell you're going to get every day, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
Hey, and Beth Ann, I don't need a big sign saying promote the Spike Show this weekend. I was going to do it. I am a professional. I wanted to give Mr. Carradine time to answer the questions. How about that? Any chemistry with Uma Thurman? None. She went off and knitted.
That was
worth the entire
it
interview.
It all was.
All right, so watch that show. Kung Fu Killer, 2-part miniseries. That's Sunday night on Spike TV.
Wow.
What are we doing? I totally lost my train of thought.
We're going away and then we're coming back.
That's good. When we come back, we've got something very special. There's a very large boy that's been hanging out. And, he's been associated with the show. You might know him as Charlie.
Oh, he's here.
Charlie's coming by. Well, we call it Charlie's Consumer Report.
He has a prepared report?
Charlie's favorite things when we come back right after this.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show.